Welcome, Capital Raisers. We have Chris Perkins on the show today to talk about his 506c exchange-traded fund that invests in public equities, doing calls and puts. This was a blast exploring an asset class that I'm completely uneducated in. And in the end, he does a lot of great things to raise capital that translate universally. Are you ready to raise? If you'd like to explore partnerships with me, talk shop on capital raising, or hire me as a coach, use the scheduling link in the show notes. With that, it's Capital Raiser Show episode 261, and it starts now. Rock and roll, I got Chris Perkins on the Capital Raiser Show. It's Capital Raiser Show season 3 now, brought to you by Pitch Decks. How are you, Chris?
Thank you so much for having me.
Very cool, man. We get to explore some new topics. So you're a previous real estate syndicator. You moved into private equities. You started a fund. We're going to chat a lot about that stuff, about raising capital. So I can't wait to dive in. But for the people that don't know you, tell us a little bit about your background, man. How did you get into this thing called Capital Raise?
So I started my career in the restaurant business at 21 years old in 2004. And the restaurant business is a challenging place to be. It's a hard place to start, but I got started in that. And then I knew from the beginning that I didn't want to stay there for the rest of my life. So it was, what can I transition to? And when I bought the restaurant, I bought the real estate, I bought everything.
Okay.
So restaurant business is a tough thing to scale as well.
Yeah, you can never make the customers happy too.
angry people
sometimes.
Yeah, and you kind of got to cope with that. Like, it's going to happen no matter what. We had a really low complaint rate and things like that, and pretty relatively low staff turnover, but it's still a difficult thing for sure.
So where are you located at?
I'm in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, Canada.
Cool.
That's a bit of a tongue twister.
Yeah, I don't know that I could repeat that. All right, so tell me, when you left the restaurant business, what did you get into next?
Real estate deals. So I did a couple of commercial deals. I actually had two restaurants. So when I sold the restaurants, when I made my exit, I leased out the restaurant buildings to the new owners. So I just sold the businesses, signed 10-year deals for leases on the buildings, and then kind of did some passive real estate investing, bought some land. When it came time that I got an offer on it to sell it, then I sold it. Just kind of took opportunities when they came to me, but pretty passive. I spent about 6 years traveling all over the place.
Where did you go?
I went on a 6-month trip through South America. Woo. I spent 2 winters in the southern US living in an RV. Spent 6 months in Kelowna, Canada. There's a ski resort there. So I lived there for a ski season. And then I also lived in the Dominican Republic for a winter. So I was kind of like on this mission to escape cold winters for the most part.
Very cool. Let me ask you this, Ben. How did you get the money to start the restaurant business? Was raising capital for that something that you had to do?
I didn't have to raise any capital for that. So I worked like a madman from about 15 years old because I wanted a car. Dad wasn't buying me a car. Mom wasn't buying me a car. So somebody had to come up with the money for the car. So I worked like a madman from 15 until through the restaurant business, through it all. But that's where I saved up a lot of money. So in my last senior year of high school, I was like $4,000 a month. Keep in mind, this is 2000, year 2000, 2001 kind of thing. Making $4,000 a month as a kid in high school. And my dad's like, you are not going to just squander this money away. So you're either going to start paying rent or you're going to start saving some of this money. And I was like, well, much rather save the money than give it to you. So started saving, started squirreling some money away. And pretty soon I had a pretty decent chunk of change piled up. And so I used some of that money to start the restaurant. And then in order to buy the building as well, when we bought the restaurant, my dad allowed me to use his apartment building as collateral. So we didn't really put any money down. We just used the equity as collateral.
Cool. To buy the building. Cross collateralization, guys. It's a real thing. Very cool. All right. So you decide to leave the restaurant business. And then what happened then?
After I left the restaurant business, I was tired. I slept so long. So for the first 6 months, I would sleep like 12, 14 hours a day. I was just exhausted, just kind of trying to find myself again, because it kind of becomes your identity. You like live, eat, you literally eat, sleep, and breathe the restaurant business. And if you're not doing that, then you're probably not doing a great job of it, really. So you kind of have to really be involved in it. And as soon as you're not involved in it, customers start complaining more. Nobody's going to have the passion for it that you do. And so essentially, after I left, I wanted to start looking for other ways to generate cash flow. And I didn't want to have employees. That was my number one thing, is I didn't want to have employees in the future. I wanted to work with people that had aligned interest with me.
Okay.
Rather than employees.
And then, so you started doing some real estate investing. You said some passive investing. Are you talking about in Canada or the US or a combination?
A little bit of both. Bought some land in Florida, bought a couple of pieces in Nevada. And me and my dad were kind of working together, and he was kind of on his way out, but like sort of mentoring me because he had real estate all the while I was growing up. And so I kind of had him as a mentor for the real estate side of things. It's kind of the whole thing, buy land and wait. You can't lose money in real estate, all these taglines kind of thing, right? And that's kind of what sucked me into the real estate and kind of sticking to what I knew at that point. And so kind of scaled that, did a few syndications with some close friends of mine.
As a GP or as a limited partner?
We all just kind of pitched in money. And so there was no GP. We all just
like
pitched
joint venture.
Yeah, exactly. Like a joint venture. We all just pitched in money and then we split the profits proactively as people were percentage wise invested in the property. So I didn't take a management fee. It was just kind of friends doing business together. And it wasn't super organized. We just created a company, put our money into the company, and then we'd do these deals.
And how did that go for you? Was it successful?
Some of it was really good. Some of it was really bad. So 2012 to 2014, things were really kind of in an upscale ramp in the city that we were from. It was heavily oil-based. And then 2014, oil prices crashed. So did the real estate in that town. We made some money on some deals on the way up and then lost some money in some deals on the way down. But we were actually able to liquidate those deals. And much to the chagrin of some of the investors, they didn't want to liquidate them. They're like, let's just hold them and rent them out. And it's like, no, I'm making an executive decision here to get rid of these things. And it turns out still today, they'd be underwater if we hadn't gotten rid of them. And that was 2014. So,
wow. So you liquidated your real estate. How long has it been since you did that?
I haven't liquidated everything. So I still have just rough number, about 3 million in real estate. And I'm not going to get rid of it until it recovers because it's just, I'm not going to like sell it for a loss. And it's pretty beat up right now just because of what's happened in that town, the economic outlook in that town. It will turn around eventually. It always has. And We still need oil and stuff like that. So it's still going to turn around. And yeah, so
are you losing money in the meantime? Or is it
there's property taxes to service. And that's about it.
That's not bad. Very cool. Yeah. All right. So what have you moved into since then?
Since then, I've kind of been looking at a lot more ways to scale. And real estate is hard to scale as well. And like, hats off to people that are able to do it in massive ways, because you need massive teams to do this. And so what I wanted to look at was, how do we create something scalable? And I went to a few stock market investing seminars, options investing seminars, and how to use options. And then that was about 5 years ago that I went to these seminars. And then I started to kind of build my own style and really assess the risk that I was willing to take. Try to find a strategy that was refined enough that I'm willing to put my entire portfolio into that once my real estate liquidates. And so if I'm convicted enough in it that I can put my whole portfolio in it, it's going to be a lot easier for me to explain it and show investors that this is like going to help them in a big way. And I always kind of thought, like, you put your money in a stock, hope that stock goes up. And then you learn about options and shorting stock. And it's like, now you're just betting against it either going up or going down. And so just kind of refining the strategy from there, rather than going and betting on what the stock might do, you can actually use a strategy where it doesn't matter what the stock does. You just have to control your emotions. And so really mastering your emotions in the stock market is the key. It's like Warren Buffett has this saying, investing is simple, but it's not easy.
Yeah. So a lot of my listeners, I think, would say stocks. I don't think some of them, at least not me, understand stocks. I've taken some of these classes, various Forex trading and stock options and puts and calls and some of that stuff a long time ago. I don't think I really felt confident in my learning and understanding just based off of the people that I was seeing, that some of them were having success and a lot of them were not. And it's kind of a volatile roller coaster. So I think what we're interested in finding out is, what made you feel so confident that you could take this particular trading style and become effective at it when there's so many people that are losing and suffer from great losses and the volatility of those types of equities?
For sure. I do a lot of real estate analogies when I'm explaining this to people, because, you know, real estate background, a lot of people I talk to are in real estate. So You have a price of an asset. It doesn't matter what the asset is. It's a piece of real estate. It's a stock. It doesn't matter what the price is. And you can, with options, use options to bet whether the stock goes up by buying a call, then the call will turn profitable. And you can bet that the stock will go down by buying a put. But there's someone on the other side of those transactions that's selling it. And the problem with buying an option like that is time is your enemy. And there's only one certainty in life. Time is going to go by no matter what happens. So how can we put all the risk on our side? We sell stock options, and my company's Abundance Asset Management, and we use that mindset of abundance around our trading strategy. So we just sell stock options constantly. And as time goes by, we don't need the stock to go up. We just need time to go by, and those options will become profitable.
Okay. So as my friends and myself are scaling, we really love real estate. I think a lot of us are like 100% full-blown crazy about real estate. But I think we see the future as an opportunity to diversify into multiple things, use more and more sophisticated family office type structures, you know, offshore trusts or hybrid trusts, infinite banking policies, and other things like that, where we're using 1031 exchanges and going into diversifying into other things besides multifamily, maybe industrial or hotels or self-storage or RV parks or mobile home parks. And at some point, a percentage of us may want to invest in startups or stocks and bonds, but we may not understand all of that. We can't be experts at everything. But for the people that would be interested in moving some money into stocks or options or even Forex, tell us a little bit about how you have it structured so they can put a little bit, park a little bit of their money and diversify into your deal. How does that work? How do they begin to trust you enough to believe that you can manage their money and be a good steward for their capital?
Yeah, that's a great question. So one of the things that I love about our strategy and I love about public equities is that I can show you in a simulator how our strategy works before you even have to commit any capital. You don't have to give us any money, and I'll work with you. And that's kind of how we build trust, is I'll teach you how the strategy works. I'll show you how to do it in a simulated trade platform, and you can learn about it in real time. Sometimes it takes people 30 days to figure out, like, hey, this is pretty good. This is pretty neat. And then sometimes it takes people a little longer. It just depends on how much time the person's willing to commit. If I meet with someone once a week, their chances of learning it in 30 days are very high. And if I meet with someone once a month, it's going to take a lot longer because you lose a lot of the progress after a month of not looking at it. So it just depends. We like to educate our investors because we don't want emotional investors. We want people that, exactly like you said, trust what we're doing. We want to provide a unparalleled level of transparency. So if someone invests with us, once they get that trust with us, they invest with us, they'll be able to log into their portal and see the trading happen in real time. They'll get a notification that we're going to trade. They can see everything that's going on within the fund in real time.
And then, so how much would the minimum and maximum amount that someone would invest with you typically be?
Right now, our first round is going to be 10 million and we're expandable to 100 million. Minimum investments, 50,000. So we need all accredited investors because we are a 506C. But what I want to do is kind of lower the bar, because what we're doing is capital intensive because we use no leverage at all. We're always cash secured. Because we use no leverage, what we do is capital intensive, but that's part of the risk mitigation as well.
So then when somebody invests with you, actually, let me go into the fund. Is the fund US based or Canadian based?
Completely US. Everything is US based about it, except me personally.
Okay, cool. So you have a 506C in the United States. Tell us about creating the fund. What made you think that you could start a fund? This is your first fund, is that correct?
It's my first fund, yeah.
And then you're still in the process of just getting it launched right now, or it's already, you've already done all the paperwork, you've worked with the lawyers.
Yep.
And it's just now getting off the ground where you can start to accept investments. I believe you said you were going to be your very first investor for this. Is this correct?
Yeah, exactly. And by the time this airs, I'll have had the money in there since March 1st. So,
okay, cool. And then, so how did you learn about fund? What made you decide to use a fund structure?
Actually, how I came across it was just Googling how to start a hedge fund, Google's your friend, right? I mean, you want to ask something, maybe ChatGPT is the new artificial intelligence that's going to help more. But I just started Googling things about how to start a fund in Canada, how to start a fund in the US. And then through targeted ads, actually investment fund secrets came up in my searches. And so investment fund secrets helps people start funds. Really? And so I bought a membership there for a year, worked with them. It was a great experience. All in all, I learned a ton, and I learned a ton about compliance and made some connections that will be lifelong for sure. So that was a year long process of from beginning to end and just iterating and iterating and iterating about what my investment thesis was.
What is your investment thesis?
So 90% of funds of portfolio managers fail to outperform the S&P 500. And this is fairly common knowledge. And so essentially what that means to investors is like you are paying your investment advisor for nothing, because you could put your money into the S&P 500 and outperform 90% of financial advisors out there. So what I did was, we've got to beat the S&P 500, or what are we doing? We're not offering our investors any value there. What I did was look for an ETF, which is exchange traded fund, for those that don't know, that tracks an index that has a history of outperforming the S&P 500. And then I designed the stock options strategy specifically to outperform the underlying asset that we trade with it. So the NASDAQ 100 produces about a 14.4% return on average if you include dividends, where the S&P 500 is right around 9% if you include dividends. So it outperforms by about 5.5%. And our stock options strategy doesn't even need the stock to go up in order to make a positive return.
Okay, cool. So I'm reading this book by Salvatore Buscemi. It's called Raising Real Money, Real Estate Funds Uncovered. In here, it talks about chapter 3 is the 5 functions of a fund manager defined. What have you learned is your duty? What are the functions that you're going to be personally in charge of in your fund? Do you have any fund partners, or is it all yours?
I have a few partners. Some of them are on paper partners and some of them are not on paper. They're more like phantom shares partners, mm-hmm. where once things kind of scale up, then they'll actually get paid like they are partners, but just easier paperwork to not have them and then try to kick them out of the company if they decide to go somewhere else or something. But we pay everybody like they're an owner. And I have this plan called quantifiable remuneration. So everybody gets out what they put in, get paid based on results, get paid based on the results.
I like
of the
that.
Fund. All quantifiable remuneration. If you want to be a part of my system, then everything that you put in will be recorded and you'll be paid accordingly.
I have a similar thing with my partner at Legacy Acquisitions, where I have a tiered ownership structure based off of, I can own up to 50% of the company based off of how I perform. So what is it that you're going to be doing? How are you going to be performing within your fund? What are your roles?
So my role is to oversee the trading. I have the system, the trading system in place. We have a software engineer that will be programming APIs and making sure that the trade criteria is met. And so it'll be supervising. My role will be supervising that. We have a compliance expert. We have a tax strategist expert as well. So just kind of like pointing people in the right direction of where they need to go. And then obviously searching for leads and raising capital. And then the biggest role, I'll say the last, but not definitely not least, the biggest role I see for myself is helping people manage their emotions. Because the biggest thing with the stock market is emotional trading. And that's my main job as a fund manager, the way I see it, is that I'm a barrier in between people's emotions and their money. Because everyone knows that you can buy low and sell high an infinite amount of times. Yet how many times have you heard, oh, my uncle lost everything in the stock market?
Lots of times.
Joe lost everything in the stock market a ton of times because they weren't managing risk and they weren't managing their emotions. Those are the main things. Everybody tends to, well, I shouldn't say everybody, but a lot of people tend to buy high and they sell low. They get FOMO, buy in at the high, and then it goes down and they sell. Mm-hmm. And when you should be doing exactly the opposite. My strategy is designed basically to make an emotional disconnection with the money. So when we sell an option, we look at it like if we sell a put, we're putting in a limit buy order. So let's say stock is trading at $100 a share. Doesn't matter what the number is. We want to buy it at 95. We can sell a put option. Let's say we get paid $1 per share, but we already are happy to buy the stock for 95. So we're going to get paid just to place an order to buy the stock. And if the stock goes down, then we buy it at 95. So imagine if you put this spin on real estate, you got $1 million piece of property that you're looking at and you want to pay 950 for it. Imagine if you could get paid 10 grand just to put an offer in on it that expires in 30 days. If the owner of the property accepted your deal, then you buy the property for 950. If they don't, you get to keep the 10 grand and you can do that every month.
Interesting. How are you going to deal with the fund administration? I'm curious about this. This is something I think we should start exploring a little bit more on the show.
I love that you asked that because a lot of people want to do their own admin. I'm actually watching right now the Bernie Madoff thing on Netflix, and they didn't have a third party admin for obvious reasons. They didn't want one. And same with FTX. They didn't want a third party admin. So we have a third party admin called NAV Consulting. They manage the administration for about 2,500 hedge funds and real estate funds. They also do real estate funds, but it keeps this barrier between the fund manager and the money. So let's say that you invest $50,000 with me and you've already been with me for a year and you're like, you know what, Chris, this has been great, but I want to withdraw some of my money. I'm going to leave some in there. I want to withdraw my gains, let's say. I can say, okay, I've got we're with a registered investment advisory firm as well called Saber Private Wealth Management. And so I've got to contact the advisory firm, say, hey, Ruben wants to take some money out. So the advisory firm initiates the transfer. Then I essentially approve that transfer. And then it goes for a third approval through NAV. And NAV actually is the one that wires the money to you. So it has to go through three hands and it has to go into that bank account that you sent it from. So let's say, Ruben, that you invested through a company and then you want to withdraw the money to a bank account with your personal name on it. NAV would not approve that. It would be a no-go.
Okay, cool. And then NAV is also going to handle the K-1s and or yep. whatever kind of taxes that they do and handle all of the returns.
Investment statements. Yeah. So we awesome. Do monthly statements to everybody. And I write my message in there to everybody that I want them to read. And they distribute the K-1s. They do our financial statements. It's very cost effective. And it's third party. So, you know, it's all being done correctly. They don't do audits, but they will prepare everything for an audit and assist you with the audit as much as they need.
So is this an open-ended fund where people can invest and then pull their money out whenever they want?
We have a one-year lockup period. Okay. And we want our investors to have a five-year time horizon because I believe that's important in any investment, that you should have a five-year time horizon. We don't know what the future holds. In 5 years, I'm completely confident that we'll be able to double people's money, especially in the market scenarios that we're in right now, market situation that we're in right now. The most money is made investing in through a recession.
Interesting stuff. Okay, cool. Anything else that we should cover about your business model or the fund that you think the audience would be able to learn from?
I think it's pretty deep to try to summarize, but essentially what we're doing is selling insurance against the stock market. And so we're investing in technology. And if you picture the stock price moving up and down through time, as time goes on, we're just picking up the crumbs on either side of the stock price. So we're using the compounding effect of this. And so there's a stat that I'll leave people with on this subject. 93% of stock options that are sold out of the money expire worthless. And for us, that's good. That means profit.
Interesting. And then, so what do people see when they go into your portal?
When they go into their portal, they'll be able to see their net asset value will be updated every Friday at the end of market close. And so they'll be able to see what their investment is worth. They'll be able to see all of our open positions in the brokerage account. So complete transparency.
Okay. And then another thing is with the fund, I think a lot of people think that if they just start a fund that they'll automatically have the money available to do stuff with it, but they don't realize a lot of times that they have to go out and raise the capital. So a lot of that involves education and nurturing and social media posts and exposure. Tell me about the capital raising for you. What have you learned about what is going to be required for you to get investors on board with you? What's going to be your kind of systems and procedures?
I think looking at investors as investors is probably not the right mindset. I look at investors as my partners. We're business partners. They're limited partners and they don't have a say, but they're still partners. And I still take into consideration what they need. And so if a partner comes along and they want to make a quick buck, that's not the partner for us. I've had people like, hey, I can put $1 million in there, but I need it back in 9 months. And I'm like, that's, we're not going to do that because we don't know what the market's going to do. And our strategy is based completely on that, that we have no idea what the stock market will do in the next 3 months, 2 months, doesn't matter. We don't predict it. So in order for us to onboard an investor, we have to have an alignment. And so we want to establish that alignment first. And then we want to educate our investor as much as possible. Some of our investors are going to inherently know exactly what we're doing because they're well equipped, sophisticated enough to understand the strategy that we're doing. And they're either going to like it or they're going to think they can do better themselves. So establishing the relationship, fostering it as you go, and just keeping in touch, keeping in contact with those people, reaching out to them. Hey, how's it going? It doesn't always have to be about money. It's like, how's the wife? How's the kids? How is life treating you? Kind of follow that principle of like, be interested instead of being interesting.
Mm-hmm. And then, so how are you going to find your investors? Do you have an avatar?
We have an avatar. It's essentially high income earners or people. There's two different kind of avatars that we're looking for, is either someone that's sold a business and they're in the early stage of retirement where they've got enough capital that they need to generate some cash flow from it, but they don't need the cash flow tomorrow. They need it in a year or two. So they've got enough money to live off of and also invest in us. And then the other avatar is a high income earner that can make constant contributions over the course of 10 to 15 years. And if someone could make constant contributions over 10 to 15 years, then at that point, let's say 15 years from now, they would be able to make a sustainable living off of our distributions in 15 years.
And so what are you doing to like educate the public on your strategy to get them interested in getting on a call with you?
We educate the public. We don't so much like put random posts out there. I try to do things a little bit more personally by sending personal messages on LinkedIn to people that I know want to make a difference in the world or that are looking for investments and looking for investment vehicles that are innovative and a little bit different. And so I reach out to them personally rather than kind of blasting posts out there that may or may not hit people. So I think just a personal touch more than anything.
You selected the 506C for the ability to advertise and get accredited investors, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So what are your advertising mechanisms? What are you going to do to, or are you going to use that at all?
Yeah, we're going to use it on a YouTube channel. So we're going to do a lot of podcasts like this. We want to do podcasts like this and also record our training sessions so that people can learn how our strategy works. They'll be able to see the strategy on our YouTube channel. And I think as we scale and they see the funds profits coming in, then that YouTube channel will be source of leads for us as well.
Okay. And are you all in on your strategy? Do you think that you would ever diversify back into real estate, or are you like 100% gung-ho on this specific strategy that you're using and you think that you'll do that 100% exclusively for the rest of your life?
I will do this strategy for the rest of my life, and I won't diversify back into real estate in the private sector. I will diversify into the public sector real estate, say REITs or other publicly traded liquid assets. So the best part about this strategy is that because it's designed to outperform a buy and hold, that's our service to our investors. Is like, let's say that you go out and you buy shares of ticker symbol XYZ, doesn't matter. If you want to invest in that, you can invest through Abundance Asset Management, and our strategy will leave you better than you just going out and buy the stock yourself. So we want to have single stock funds. They're very measurable. So what we want to do is day one you invest with us is we take a snapshot of what the QQQ is trading at, which is a NASDAQ 100 ETF that we trade right now. So it's a single stock fund. And if you invested in it today, in 1 year, you'll be better off that you've invested with Abundance Asset Management than if you just went out and bought shares of the QQQ. Yeah, we can transfer this to every asset, every publicly traded asset, any publicly traded asset out there that has an options chain.
Rock and roll, man. All right, well, let's jump into the lightning round, man. So I'm curious, what's the best vacation you've ever taken?
There's a tie. So there's two. One for sentimental reasons. I went to Russia with my grandmother. She was 82 at the time, and I'll never forget that trip. It was her dream her whole life to go to Russia. Her mother was a World War I refugee from Russia and came over to Canada when she was 3 years old. And my grandmother always wanted to go back there and just never did. My grandpa didn't like traveling. And then he passed, and she's like, I got to go to Russia. So yeah, I was able to do that trip with my grandmother, and she was 82 at the time. She ended up passing away 3 years later, but like so happy that I got to do that trip with her.
That's amazing. Favorite book of any kind?
Favorite book would probably be Tony Robbins, Awaken the Giant Within.
That's good. Okay, cool. I haven't heard anybody say that, and that is a fantastic book. I like Tony Robbins. He's one of my mentors for sure. Do you have any hacks for breaking through limiting beliefs?
One of the things that I try to focus on is like, you're not the pioneer of this. Somebody else has done this. And if somebody else has done it, try to model what they did and figure out what they did to get where they're going. Because it's in this day and age, it's pretty tough to think that you're pioneering something. There's a lot of things that have already been done.
That's phenomenal. I posted something exactly like that just the other day. All right, how long do you want to live?
As long as my health is with me.
So you got to put a number on it.
I got to put a number on it. Can the caveat be that I still have health?
Of course. I mean, yeah. That's the main point. I think that people really need to understand that whatever they visualize themselves being healthy at is very likely what they're going to manifest, because the subconscious is working, bringing into existence what you think about. So if you start to imagine, here's my advice, guys. If you're starting to imagine yourself like hurting and in pain and bent over, that's what's going to bring about in existence. So you want to imagine yourself healthy at whatever age you want to be, because that's exactly what your mind's going to bring into existence. That's from my perspective. So from that mindset,
I'll say it'd be really nice to make it 200.
Awesome. See, I love that. Okay, cool. Yeah. Can you tell me about a moment that changed the trajectory of your life?
Probably in the Dominican. I spent 6 months in the Dominican Republic, and I remember sitting on the beach just thinking like, I should be a lot happier than I am sitting on this beach right now. And I had passive income, like I was fine, and just thought like, I'm young, I'm meant for more than this. I can't just sit on a beach for the rest of my life. Like, it's great and I'm living everybody's dream life, but like, I can't do this forever.
That's cool. I like that. I had a similar experience living in Playa del Carmen, where I was living in paradise and I was just like, man, I know that I can contribute more to the world. Very interesting. All right, what do you love best about kiteboarding?
I really like adrenaline. I like the freedom that you feel when you're flying through the air, but you're still in control of the kite, hopefully.
That's a cool hobby, man. Best way to raise capital from your perspective?
From my perspective, it's a relationship business. So the more relationships you can build, the more quality relationships you can build, and the trust that you can build with people is priceless. Like, then you kind of can, the sky's the limit at that point.
Do your spiritual philosophies have anything to do with your success in business?
I'm not a super spiritual person. I believe an abundant mindset will get you places. So just more of a mindset thing rather than a spiritual thing. It might be a nuance, but
I think it is a nuance, because abundance, I believe, is a very spiritual thing. Have you ever experienced a miracle or had a near-death experience?
Yes, both of those things. They're two different ones. I almost died kiteboarding once, and I was sucked under a wave, and it was for way too long. And I was stuck under this wave, and it seemed like the kite was dragging me further under the water rather than further out of the water. The kite was also stuck in the wave ahead of me. I was dragging through the water for like way too long, and I couldn't release, and I was panicking. And I got to the point where I needed to take a breath. It was happening whether I was in the water or out of the water. And it just so happened I was wearing a hat that, when as I was getting sucked through the water, the bubbles created this vacuum under the hat, and I was able to actually take a breath. And then I got out of the water, like right after, out of the water, and got some fresh air right after that. And then for the miracle one, my sister has Down syndrome. And when she was 5, she was diabetic, but we didn't know she was diabetic yet. And she slipped into a coma in the night.
Damn.
And Stars Ambulance came, and we lived on a farm at the time. Stars Ambulance came, it's a Canadian kind of rescue squad, basically, or Coast Guard kind of thing. It would be similar to the Coast Guard. They came and rescued her, and she ended up living and was fine after that. But they got her to the hospital. The doctor said that if she was another 20 minutes, she wouldn't have made it. Just to take that a step further, my mom bought a ticket to the Stars lottery. They have a lottery to raise money for the ambulance service, the helicopter ambulance service. And my mom's like, well, I have to buy a ticket. I mean, they saved my daughter's life, right? So she bought like $500 worth of tickets. And then the draw for one of the prizes was on my sister's birthday for a brand new vehicle. And she ended up, my mom won the brand new vehicle for $500 worth of tickets. So pretty wild. Yeah.
That's amazing. Very cool. All right. Last question brought to you by Shanna Amigo. She would like to know, what impact would you like to leave in this world?
Our eventual mission with Abundance Asset Management is to offer non-accredited investors an outperforming investment vehicle that can help them get from non-accredited status to accredited status and kind of open their world to all the investments that are available out there to accredited people.
Cool, brother. Very interesting answers on the lightning round. Shout out to the Capital Raiser Nation. Please leave us a 5-star written review. Shout out to Legacy Acquisitions and our sponsors, Syndication Pro, Family Office Club, and PitchStacks.com. Check out their offers at CapitalRaiserShow.com. All right, Chris, how does the audience get a hold of you, brother?
My email is chris@abundanceassetmanagement.com. And then the website is abundanceassetmanagement.com. And there's a schedule a call. Please feel free to schedule a call with me, even if you're not interested in investing. You just want to connect and have a chat for an hour.
Cool, man. It's definitely been fun exploring and listening to your perspectives on how to raise capital and launching a fund, and all of your life experience has been a blast. Very interesting products and investments that you're doing. So I wanted to learn a little bit about that, and hopefully the audience got something out of that as well. Now, let me ask you one last thing. Do you have any parting words of wisdom for the aspiring capital raiser as they scale, or aspiring fund manager even, as they scale in their business?
Aspiring fund managers, if you're looking to start a fund, please get a hold of me, because we experienced a lot of struggle starting our fund. And I want to help people start funds as well, because I think you can change the world with a fund. You can make some serious impacts on people's lives. And if you've got something in your brain that can help other people, I want to help you scale that as well. We went through all these struggles. I don't want people to have to go through the same struggles that I went through. It's pointless. Reach out to me and we can go over that as well.
Okay, very cool. And for any family offices or startups or other kind of capital raisers, our show has predominantly been about real estate syndications and raising capital for that type of stuff. We want to start exploring some new avenues, because raising capital is probably going to have a lot of the same principles regardless of what asset you are in. Feel free to reach out. We're looking for guests that are in real estate and also are doing other things too. So this has been a lot of fun, man. Thanks for coming on the show, Chris. I really appreciate it. I look forward to following your progress.
Thanks so much for having me, Ruben.
You bet, brother.